So one of the first provisions that you deal with in the EPC contract is the scope of work provision. So the scope of work provision is going to describe what work the contractor is going to complete. In the EPC context, it's going to include a discussion of all design work, procurement, and construction. The scope of work will generally reference detailed exhibits that are attached to the contract. So these will be specs and requirements that are described in great detail. From an owner's standpoint, one of the things that I always like to do is include a very broad scope of work. I want to be sure that we get that turnkey project, that the contractor is going to do everything and not come back every time they need to do something and request additional money. So we don't want change orders for work that the contractor was originally contracted to do when it signed the contract. So I want a broad scope of work. I like to include language somewhere in there that says that the contractor is going to do everything reasonably implied by the scope of work to achieve a finished product. In the materials throughout the course of this presentation, you'll see sample contract provisions. If they're in the portion of the slides that I'm talking about, it's usually going to be an owner-friendly provision. If Spencer's talking about that section, it's going to be a contractor-friendly provision. So here's a sample provision that you can look at later after the conference is over. I included this photo because this actually is a photo, and when this condition arose, we had to look at the scope of work provision in the contract. So what you see here is either a very poorly constructed or non-existent access road through the middle of a solar site under construction. And when this photo was taken, the interconnection provider was ready to do their work to connect the system to the grid. The problem was the utility came to us and said, well, I don't have access. I can't drive through your site because, you know, look at this road or non-existent road. So we had to look at the scope of work provision and say, okay, well, contractor, were you supposed to build this road? They took the position they were not required to build the road because the detailed specs and requirements never said anything about this specific road. Luckily, we had a broad scope of work provision like the one I included in the materials, and so we won that battle. But I added this photo because it kind of shows how important that scope of work provision can be.
So it won't surprise you that the contractor wants the opposite. The contractor's preference is to describe the work to be completed as specifically and in as much detail as possible so that it can provide an accurate price for the work that it's going to be doing. From their perspective, if parts of the work are not specified in the EPC contract, they may not be included in the price. So the contractor only wants to be responsible for the work that's included in the price. One other item that's often addressed in these scope of work provisions is that the contractor doesn't want to be responsible for any work that's performed by either the owner or from some other third party or rather contractor. So often in the scope of work, the contractor is going to want to be real specific about not only everything that it's responsible for doing, but also in some instances things that it's not responsible for doing, and make that very clear.
So there's always going to be a section of the contract that deals with site condition. The contract needs to include provisions to allocate responsibility in the event site conditions are different when the contractor arrives on the site to start work than what was expected when the price was fixed. If conditions are different, the contractor is going to want price and schedule relief. For solar and wind projects, when we're talking about unforeseen or differing site conditions, what we're really talking about are either subsurface or environmental conditions, so conditions that might be discovered through an environmental report or through a geotechnical report. So in some instances, you're going to have issues if the geotechnical report or the environmental report had errors. So what's going to happen is the contractor is usually going to take a look at those reports, fix the price, and that's going to be the price included in the contract. If the contractor gets on site and the conditions are different and those reports were incorrect, then there's going to be additional time associated with the project and there's going to be additional cost. And the contractor is going to expect the owner to pick up that extra time and that extra cost. So the owner wants the contractor to be responsible for everything. I mean, if you get out there and discover something that you didn't include in your price, well, we, as an owner, we kind of want you to cover that. There are situations where that the owner is reasonable in taking that position. First off, if the contractor actually prepared the geotechnical report or prepared the environmental report and the contractor committed an error, well, then, of course, the contractor should be responsible. But I take the position in negotiating these contracts that if the report was so deficient that the contractor should have known that the contractor should not rely on the report, then ultimately the contractor should bear that responsibility also. Finally, if the report was appeared to be fine, but then the contractor went on site and should have been able to discover before the price was fixed and the contract signed that there was a problem, then the contractor should bear that responsibility as well. Included in the materials, as I mentioned, is a sample provision that lists some of the grounds that I would argue would fall on the contractor and make the contractor responsible for differing site conditions.
So what are the contractor's areas of focus when it comes to site conditions? Contractor is generally going to argue that it should be entitled to rely on the information that the owner supplies with regard to the site. So if there are different site conditions that are discovered during the course of the project, the contractor should be able to receive scheduling and at times pricing relief. And here is a sample provision that is, I think, more contractor friendly.
So now we'll talk about liquidated damages. Most EPC contracts for renewable projects include two specific guarantees. The contractor guarantees that the project is going to be completed by a specific date, and the contractor guarantees that the system will perform at a certain level, that the capacity of the system will achieve a guaranteed level of capacity. If the schedule is not met, usually liquidated damages take the form of a day-per-day penalty, so a certain dollar amount per day that the contractor is going to be liable for if the contractor fails to meet the schedule. And when we're talking about a performance guarantee of related to capacity, it's going to be a certain dollar amount per megawatt.